You are listening to Social Europe Podcast. We discuss cutting-edge thinking on politics, economy, and employment and labour with some of the most thought-provoking people around, including Nobel Prize winners and other internationally acclaimed experts. So welcome and enjoy the conversation.
This episode of Social Europe Podcast is brought to you by the New School for Social Research. The New School for Social Research is a world-renowned graduate school in New York City, offering master's and doctoral programs in the social sciences and humanities. New School students and faculty work to understand social problems through progressive interdisciplinary scholarship and create new ideas in the world. To learn more about the New School for Social Research, visit newschool.edu/NSSR. Hello and welcome everybody to the 8th episode of Social Europe Talk, recorded live in the European Parliament, not live, but recorded in the European Parliament in Brussels. My name is Henning Meyer, Editor-in-Chief of Social Europe. As always, I'm joined by a great panel of people. Today on my right is Montserrat Mir, who is from the Just Transition Center of the International Trade Union Congress. To my immediate right is Stan Jourdain from Positive Money. And last but not least, a frequent guest of the show, Javi Lopez, Member of European Parliament from Spain. Today our topic is the just transition and what it means. And Montserrat, please let me start with you. From your work experience, can you explain what we mean by just transition and what the social dimension of the just transition is or should be?
Just transition is like a big umbrella. Now everybody's talking about just transition. Everybody's using the concept just transition, but we must remember that was in Paris after the heart fight that we achieved to include the word or the concept just transition in the preamble of the Paris Agreement. But for us, just transition means all that is in our DNA as the trade unions is social protection, is to include workers in the decision process, is to not let no one behind, because as we always say, without workers' participation, without the voice of the workers, it's very difficult, will be very difficult to have this just transition. At the same time, just transition is also the governance of this, what we call the decarbonization process of the economy, is to take into account people and to take into account that behind each decision there is an impact on people, on jobs. And we need to be ready for to implement the just transition. And the just transition must be just, because if not, it's not a good transition for people. That is more or less what we consider just transition. Just transition means to take into account trade union rights, human rights, workers' participation, social dialogue as a key element, because without dialogue, impossible, but also gender equality, indigenous rights, all this that we consider the social dimension of the climate action and climate fight is what we call the just transition.
And what needs to be done? You already mentioned decarbonization. What other transitions do we need?
The transitions that we need is to have, first, a good budget. Without a good budget, it will be very difficult to do this transformation. In all the transitions, in all the revolutions, industrial revolutions and evolutions, was a good budget to support. But also we need an extra budget in that time, because all will be very fast. The transformation that we need will be very fast. Paris Agreement have deadlines. And if we want to follow the deadlines, we need also to take into account that the coal have a deadline, and fossil fuels have a deadline, and also we need to take into account the workers' rights, workers' participation. But just transition also means that workers need to have the possibility to be retrained, means the possibility to reshape their professional careers, because many of the jobs that today we know, they stop to exist in the future, and we need to decide which jobs and which capacity for each worker to achieve this transition.
Mm-hmm. And Stan, if I may come to you, you work for an organization that wants to use money for positive purposes. Mm. And what kind of transformation, apart from decarbonization of the economy, do you consider necessary? And what role can financial incentives and financial instruments play to bring this change about?
Sure. So yeah, at Posimony, we've been promoting the idea of a Green New Deal for a while, and the just transition actually just a better way of saying it, because it has to be fair, it has to be just for sure. So and I fully subscribe to the idea that it's a multifaceted concept, which includes social dimension, But then it's also about environmental reform, environmental regulation, and a new industrial strategy, especially we talk about, you know, energy transition. This has to be done at the EU level. And ultimately, we need the finances to support that. So in terms of, you know, funding the Green New Deal, we did a report with a few NGOs in September ahead of the Commission's proposals. And there are really two streams of work on there. First, we need to a better allocation of private capital. So we need to create incentives to create a big shift of funding towards fossil fuels and coal and so on, towards green or at least carbon neutral investments. That's one side. But that's not going to be enough. We also need additional funding for public investments. This is key. I mean, we have barely, you know, we are 10 years after the crisis, and right now we only have barely recovered the level of spending and investment that we had prior to 2008. So it's not enough, and that's why the Eurozone has been stalling behind. So in fact, what I find really interesting now at the current juncture is that we know there's a new crisis coming. There's a recession coming already in Germany, and it's going to follow elsewhere in Europe. We have this climate crisis, and we have the monetary policy of the European Central Bank that is not working anymore. The ECB, the European Central Bank, has injected 2.6 trillion euros of money through quantitative easing. And we honestly barely see the effect, right? It helped a bit, it softened, it helped. Mario Draghi has helped to get us out of this terrible self-fulfilling Eurozone crisis, and the Greek drama is behind us, but the European Central Bank has not managed to get on track with its inflation target of 2%. So that means we have a lot of capacity in the economy. There's a lot of we need more aggregate demand, bluntly, and this can be done through this Green New Deal or the Just Transition, because there's an opportunity that the European Central Bank is already injecting a lot of money. Now it's not going the right place, but the great news is from last week actually that the European Investment Bank has finally agreed to a new lending strategy that will remove fossil fuel, green. Do more green lending, increase the size of the lending volumes of the EIB up to 1 trillion, up to 230. So we are getting there now. It's really about connecting the pipes and making use of quantitative easing, which is an opportunity for Europe to get more investment financed.
Yeah. And Javi, the Just Transition is a huge political project. And especially, you know, you will have to convince people that this is the right thing to do, and you have to convince them about the way how to do it, especially against the backdrop of rising populism in many European countries. So how do you see, what is the political mission of the Just Transition?
Well, I think the political mission is like to be done, the transition that we must do has to be just. This is like one of the points. Not only because we believe in social justice, because it's the only path to build electoral majorities. This is the point. Why? Because like one of the risks that we see in our future is like an eco backlash, as we saw against the globalization the last years. If we don't share the benefits of this transition, because we can find a lot of benefits also, no, in terms of growth or jobs, and if we don't share the costs, that we'll have a huge transition, that it means a huge change in our economy, in transportation, industry, housing, infrastructures, taxes, trade. If we don't share costs and benefits, it will be impossible to be done, this transition. And we are talking about, well, shock absorbers of this change. This is like the soul of this idea. Because all the changes that you face in terms of policies, well, you have to deal with the costs. And the point here is how to manage the change and how to manage with these shock absorbers, social shock absorbers, especially taking into account three areas, no? Consumption, consumers, jobs, workers, and industry. And try to build policies and help these three group of people, that this is the only path to build electoral majority to do something that it has to be done, that is this transition, because like we are facing a climate emergency, and like we don't have doubts about that.
Okay, and you mentioned one of the three groups that you mentioned are workers. And Monzad, if I can come back to you, what do you actually tell people who are now employed in industries that will have to be either phased out completely, like maybe coal mining and other industries that are based on the recovery of fossil fuel, or are employed in industries that might face very significant transitions? So what do you tell these workers to reassure them of their future and take them along with you on the process?
Yes, I'm very happy because also I want to link with what Javi says. I think that just transition is also linked to the clear European, in that case, industry strategy. We need also to make strategic sectorial plans to know where we will address those workers, in which sectors we can have a job creation, and we need to prepare those workers. But when I meet the miners, for example, in Poland or in Katowice, or in Leon recently, that we were invited by the BBC to join a group that visited Leon miners, that after the agreement and the phase out call in the Spain agreement, they will probably see their life completely change. Not only their life, their ecosystem, no? We tell them that there is future, but what they want is to know the alternatives, which alternatives are on the table. Of course, they have been able to negotiate, in that case in Spain, an agreement, but in other countries there are good examples. But for to have a success in this transformation, you need to have governments, regional, national, you need to have investment funds. In that case in Spain was a fund for the phase out coal. In Europe we will have probably a just transition fund and others, because in that occasion will be gender mainstreaming, the question of will be climate mainstreaming. But what I say to the workers is that there is a clean future out of coal. But I don't want to focus on one coal. There are a lot of industries that they will need. There is this phase out coal regions platforms that we have been very, very happy. But we need to replicate the same model with other sectors, like oil and fossil fuels, and we need to replicate in agriculture, in transport, in other sectors that will be strongly affected and impacted in jobs. And what I say to the workers is, fear is logical. They have fear for the future because they don't know what will happen. But if we put on the table the necessary tools, financial, political, trade union, driving and supporting the workers, I think that we must be positive and we must encourage them to be positive. It's not always easy, it's not, but there are good experiences. For example, in New Zealand, is another part of the world, that they have been ready preparing the task force for the transformation, and now they are leading the zero net emissions, and they want to be one of the first countries into be a zero net emissions country. Because this movement, but I call a movement, a mission that we have, I think it's an opportunity to gather a lot of the people around this idea, the just transition and the decarbonization process in a positive manner, in a positive manner. And for that, we need all those tools that I say. My message to the workers when I meet to them is, you need to have trust in the future. We will do as possible from our side to put on the table the necessary tools, but you need to be positive that future is open up opportunities, because Eurostat have published that there is a lot of opportunities of job creation in the green sectors, in the green industry, in the housing, in the change completely the housing in Europe for to align with the Paris Agreement, and that will suppose job creation. But what we want, and for that is very important, the ILO Just Transition Principles, is that in this transformation, the winners are the workers. The winners must be the workers, because very often in those transformations, they are the losers. And we cannot tell them, you will be like always the losers. And for that, we need decent jobs. Decent jobs, good wages, good social protection. And we think that is a good opportunity to fight against inequalities. This is the important moment to fight against inequalities through the just transition.
Mm-hmm. And, Stan, in order to create this buy-in that is necessary actually to implement a strategy of just transition, what kind of other economic incentives and financial instruments you could think of that might help facilitate building up that kind of trust?
I think at Posimonier we really focus on the role of the European Central Bank. One reason for that, of course, there are many issues with the European Central Bank, and just to name a few, like talking about fossil fuel, the ECB still invests more than 100 billion euros in highly carbon-intensive industries. So all European institutions have to be exemplary, and not just Commission and the budget, but also the EIB, and now next step is the ECB. Coming back to your question, how to create buy-in and what are the measures? So I think the discussion, sadly, the discussion on fiscal, on creating a more fiscal European fiscal capacity have been stalling. Now we have a baby of maybe a sort of Eurozone budget that has been discussed in the Eurogroup through this budgetary instrument for convergence, but it's nowhere close to what we wanted to do originally. So, I mean, let's be honest. If the EU wants to create this transition, we need budgetary instruments. We need money. So if it's not going to come from such a Eurozone budget, if we don't want to do corporation tax at the EU level, if we don't want to do all those great ideas, then what's left? It's the European Central Bank. I know it's making many people uncomfortable, but that's maybe our last chance. So our proposal is really to say, and that I think the fact that Mrs. Lagarde has now become ECB president is a very, very encouraging news for that, because what she said when she was here in this house in September before her appointment is that she wants to put climate change at the core of the ECB's mandate. What does it mean? That means, okay, first looking at the risk that the transition includes, and the fact that if we don't transition, it's a risk, but also the fact that we do the transition is a risk for the workers and for industries. And so now this is a matter of concern for central banks. And actually, many central banks are looking into this. They created a network for greening the financial system, which includes the Bank of France, Bank of England, and ECB now has joined. So they are looking at this, and they understand now that if they don't look at this, and if we are not on track with green investment that will allow the decarbonization, then that will provoke, in any case, a financial crisis. So they need to act. The European Central Bank needs to take action. They know that. They understand. Now, what really should be done, there are again two things. One is you have to think that the European Central Bank is the bank of the banks. The central bank refinances the banks. Right now, they do that with very poor condition. There's not really conditioning for how this is done. So the idea is that you could incorporate green or ESG criteria in how much the ECB refinances banks through maybe this is technical jargon, but TLTROs, collateral framework, that might speak to some of the audience. But, you know, this is about the refinancing of the banks. The second part, which I already alluded to, is this quantitative easing. The ECB has created billions of euros. And honestly, this has gone only into liquidity for the markets and not really in the real economy. So what we need to do is to work together. The ECB is a bit isolated right now because they've done everything they could. Interest rates are negative in most countries in Europe. So now what needs to be done is to use that opportunity. Quantitative easing has been a wasted opportunity for now. Now we can use it for climate. It's the time. So what we need to do, we need to reform fiscal rules, for example, to allow governments to go a little bit beyond the 3% if this is for green investments. And of course, you need to have a criteria in place to make sure that you don't have free riding and so on. But we can do that now. The Commission has, we are close to having a taxonomy that will define what are green investments. So that means we will have soon a European standard for defining what is a green investment. Once you do that, I hope, and I think we can agree at the European level, that those investments should be exempted from fiscal rules. That's one side. The other side is the ECB could buy much more bonds, green bonds, from the European Investment Bank. So now that we have finally agreed at the EIB board to make the EIB the EU's climate bank, well, now let's scale this up. You know, once the process is in place, we can double the size of the EIB's balance sheet, and that would mean double the size of, so right now the EIB is lending about 450 billion euros of lending. So imagine we could double that, for example, in the next 5-10 years. And this is possible because the ECB will keep buying EIB bonds as part of this quantitative easing strategy.
And Javi, Stan just mentioned an important institution, what role it can play. But let me take a step back. If you look at the situation politically, mm-hmm. We are having the situation that we have to make progress in this just transition, which might induce instability or at least some discomfort in people. At the same time, we have the digital revolution, which is another source of fundamental change and discomfort. So how do you think we can build political trust in bringing people along? And also what Sven just mentioned at the example of the ECB and the EIB, how can public institutions take a leading role and show the way? I mean, one of the mechanisms could be public procurement. You can only give contracts to government suppliers who, you know, adhere to certain criteria. We have this already in the working standard space, so should we have a similar thing for, you know, a climate neutral agenda?
Well, we need public institutions playing a lead role in this transformation. This is how we can build trust. This is how we can build majorities, electoral majorities, and this is how we can use this transformation that we need, because, like, we are talking, we have to repeat it, but we are talking about the climate change and an existential threat for the human beings. This is the threat that we have now, an existential threat. And we need this huge transformation for our economy that will change almost everything. And we need public institutions playing a lead role and using all the tools that the public institutions that they have. Redistribution, regulation, financial, taxes. We need, and the on board, obviously, the civil society, social dialogue. This is like the gathering that we need to move our economy and our society to the future. This is the point. And also, like, try to think that this transformation could be a huge opportunity for Europe. It's a huge opportunity, especially for Europe. Why? Like, we are having a lot of transformation. You mentioned the digital transformation. If we think in tech companies, for example, like in artificial intelligence or 5G race, well, we are not leading this race in the world. This is a reality. If we think the biggest 100 tech companies, Europeans, eight. But in the green economy, we could play a lead global role as Europeans, our economy, our society, our workers. And then, like, use this average, this political economic average, to move the world to the future. And not only in terms of economy, also in terms of how we, the Europeans, believe the international order should be organized. Because climate change, and obviously the climate transformation, the just transformation that we need, it's the best tool to defend multilateralism, to defend dialogue, rules, cooperation, and avoid this scenario that we are facing now, this competence between great powers, that we don't feel comfortable. It's clear, the Europeans, our institutions, we don't talk this kind of language. But when we talk about, like, climate change, you can't compete against the climate.
No.
Like, it's impossible. You have to cooperate to face your threats with the climate. And for this reason, for Europe, it's a huge opportunity.
Okay, let's go on to the opportunities. You know, we saw it in previous, let's put it, political agenda. So in Germany, back in the late 90s, we had a red-green coalition government that made environmentally friendly energy production a big priority. And it led to certain economic incentives and also creation of technologies and jobs. So if we want to stress the opportunity side of this just transition, what role do you think does new technology play in this development? And can new technology also be used in a way to overcome this collective action problem, right? Because, you know, what good is it if I stop producing coal and if my neighbor continues to produce coal or even produce more coal? What matters is the overall balance. So how can we make sure that these opportunities are addressed, not just by building trust with the people, but also by bringing online new technologies that will also create jobs for people in the future?
I think the new technologies and the role of the digitalization of the labor market of our lives will play an important role. In one side, because they can be a helpful tool in the process of decarbonization. Now we are involved in a nice project run by the Just Transition Center that we try to work with unions, with governments, with companies in different countries. And the case is the more heavy industry that they need to decarbonize their production, their systems, and at the same time the consumers, they will have a role to play at the time that they decide, they choose which products they buy or not. Means technology key, for example, in the production of steel, there are new tools in the new technologies to decarbonize the process, and the cement industry that is important for housing also, means that in each sector will be very good to use technology to implement the decarbonization process. But at the same time, in this process that the regional side will be very important, because we must not forget that there are regions in Europe that will be strongly impacted, the ones that they have the coal or the mines or the production based on energy sources that are not anymore allowed, they will need to have job opportunities, and new technologies could be a good plan, because if not, we will see what happens in Spain that we call the empty Spain, that we will have, we will exacerbate the geographical differences and competition. And to avoid that all the people moves to the big cities, creating big troubles, and also other parts of the countries are empty, especially the ones that they have the old systems, the old industrial process, we need also to focus using the technology for to create jobs. This was one of the important parts of the agreement in Spain and in other parts, to use the technology to create jobs in areas that are not big cities or top regions, top industrial regions. And I think that there are the two sides where the technology could be a good support for the just transition. And at the same time, to avoid this first and second class citizens, because it's what we are fighting to. Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting point, because you can link the technology question with regional policy. So you can see this as a cross-fertilization in different policy areas. Mm-hmm. And I understand. Do you think that, you know, the development of this new technology that helps us address the climate emergency, could that be the industry of the future?
Yeah, I mean, part of it, of course, I think. But I also think there are low-tech solutions, right? But I'm going to come back to that. So I think from my conversation with central bankers, what's interesting is that they're actually afraid, paradoxically, they are afraid of a green bubble. They don't want to be too proactively supporting green investment because it might create a green bubble. And honestly, I don't really understand this argument because, innovation works by trial and errors. You need 100 failures of startups to get one successful one that would be, you know, Google or Facebook or whatever. You know, so you need this risk. The question is how you finance it. Why did the 2001 crisis, you know, the startup crisis in the US, did not create a systemic crisis as we had in 2008? Because the financing went through equity. When you do equity funding as an investor, you know, you bet, you lose, you win. You know, but there's no impact for other people. It's with your own money and you're on your own if you lose. So I think we need more of these kind of financing tools if we want to really innovate more. And maybe, you know, the state, the government can play a role in injecting equity as well. Why not? But then the bigger issue is how do you actually make that technology accessible to everyone? In a way, the money and the thing that I said before about the ECB and the EIB, you know, it's a bit too simplistic. You know, how do you scale that down to the average citizen? That's a real challenge. And for example, many economists are arguing that we need to use public banks, but you don't have development national banks in Eastern Europe in general. So you would need to develop those institutions to scale down, to bring the money that we can leverage at the European level, because interest rates are so low. We need to make that low interest rate opportunity benefit to citizens so that they can afford to put solar panels on their roof, to isolate their homes. And those are not very technical things now. It's been those technologies are well rehearsed, you know. Improving a Windows, it's not a high-tech technology, but it has to be done. So it's not just about big tech, it's also about simple, you know, well thought through redesign of housing, for example.
Yeah, setting financial incentives so everybody does it when they're building a house and refurbishing one.
Absolutely.
I mean, in Germany, the KfW is doing exactly that.
Yeah, but I think we need to go even deeper, because it's one thing to grant people even a 0% loan, you know, maybe a 10 grand, you know, 10,000 euros to do some...
tax exemptions.
Maybe you can use tax exemption, but the issue is like for low-income people and precarious people, if you don't have a stable income in the first place, how are you going to think, oh, I'm going to take this free loan? You know, the psychological aspect as well is very difficult. So I think we will need to go even further than that, and even doing that for free for people, so that they don't even need to pay to have the debt. You know, I think we need to think about that. I don't have the magic solution, but it's really about how people will use this technology, use the financing that we can put in place.
Mm-hmm. And Javi, Sen just mentioned the lack of certain institutions in, for instance, national investment banks in Eastern European countries. So let me start the final round with you. And the fundamental questions would be, what are, in your view, the top three policy priorities? So what should we do now, first, second and third? And also because, you know, we are having this conversation in the European Parliament, the heart of the European level, European democracy at the European level. How can different levels of government work together? How can the European level work together with the national level and even the local and regional level to bring about the kind of framework that we need?
Well, now we have a new commission, it seems, and this will be one of the priorities of the new commission, this transition. No? I will want to do a small comment about, like the innovation and the technology. The first thing is why we need innovation and technology, because if we want to achieve our goal, now we don't have enough technology to do it. This is like, it's obvious, but we should send this message. Our goal is to have a neutral climate economy in 2050, and probably our goal will be in Europe to reduce our emissions 50-55% to 2030. Okay, for the first step, well, maybe, but for the second step, the long-term step, we don't have enough technology. We don't have it. We have to create it. And then for the reason, like, we need innovation, we need new technology. And also it's an opportunity, because the first to create this technology will be used by the rest of the world. It's obvious, you know. This is first of all. Secondly, about policies, tools, priorities that I think we should have. We are talking about the just transition. Well, we are talking about here. We are talking about the Just Transition Fund. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is something that we will need, like mobilized resources, public resources, European, but it will be not enough European. No, also national, regional, local resources to do it possible. No, to go with this transformation, to create these shock absorbers, to help the industry to change, and also to help the workers maybe to change their skills and their jobs. This is something that we need. Just Transition Fund to do it possible, the just transition. Secondly, a climate law. This will be one of the priorities of the new commission in the first months. Theoretically, they have to deliver a climate law to say, okay, we have goals, we have the Paris Agreement, we targeted goals, but now we need step by step what will transform in our transport, economy, mobility, and so on. Climate law, Just Transition Fund. And third, the carbon adjustment. This is something about trade, attacks in our trade, international trade, that it has completely sense. It has completely sense. Because, like, one of the risks that we have is, okay, we do our homework, but then we import emissions. and we make weaker our industry, like a disaster. And this is a risk that we can have, and to try to avoid it, we need a mechanism, and this is a clear mechanism that we can. It's complex, it's not easy. All the specialists, they are trying to say, okay, how to do it? We have to think a lot about that, but we should do it the next years.
And for instance, there was one discussion about the Mercosur investment, the trade agreement. Should you put something in there to protect the Amazon, for instance? Should you use these trade relationships to further environmental goals?
Obviously. We, as Europeans, one of the main tools to push the rest of the international community that we have is like we are the biggest market in the world. The biggest market in the world. And our trade agreements should be, must be, a tool to change the world in the direction that we believe as Europeans. And
the social clauses, for example.
Social clauses, obviously, consumers' rights, privacy.
Environmental clauses.
Data, and obviously environmental clauses. And with Mercosur, that is like a huge region, we are talking about Brazil and Argentina, no? Huge region, really important for our biodiversity, really important for our atmosphere. If we are negotiating and we are ending a negotiation with them, it's possible to pass a trade agreement with them. We shall use it to be demanding in terms of climate action.
Okay, and Montserrat, what are your top three priorities and how can the European level work together with the national and regional levels?
Top three priorities is that just transition must be done with social dialogue, workers' participation, but also there is an important topic that we didn't mention is the role of the investors. The investors, they have an important role to play, not only the public, also the private, because if they really are convinced to follow the Paris Agreement and the new Green Deal, they need to invest accordingly with the Paris Agreement and the new deal is. And the other is that someone needs to lead the governance of the transition, because if not, this one is going on their side. And at the same time, I think that the climate transition must be a social also transformation. The way that we consume, the way that we produce, and the role that us as citizens, we have the lead and the power to change the Europe and the world, of course.
And what are your other priorities? What would you...
Other priorities, of course, that all this process needs to be accompanied by the social protection. That is the social model, the European social model. What we call is social protection for the workers that will be impacted. I say before, the necessary financial tools. And at the same time, the accompanied by the training process. And of course, social dialogue, workers' participation, and the workers in, never the workers out.
Okay, Stan, the final word is yours. So what would your top three policy priorities be and make sure that the European Union level works together with the national level as well?
That's a big task. I think we need to think in terms of sticks and carrots. We need a big stick now on investors because we need to divest urgently, because the fastest way to decarbonize is actually not to invest in green. It's to stop investing in so-called brown. So we need to get that. But what we've learned from the Gilets Jaunes, the yellow vest in France, is that we cannot put the stick first on people.
No.
We need first the carrot. And that's where we need the big finances in place, big investment to create new jobs. We need to rethink the governance framework, the economic framework of the Eurozone in particular. You know, the fiscal rules are really abrupt and not fit. And work on more public investments through the EIB and National Investment Bank. And as it was said by Ravi as well, I think, on the long term, we need to work. In the meantime, while we do all of that, we need to work on the carbon price issue. Because as long as we don't have this carbon, a carbon price that incorporates, the cost of externalities on all companies, all we talk about will not be hardwired into the pricing and therefore on all the behaviors of consumers as well. So we need to do that. But I think let's take the time to think about how to do it. And I think there's an interesting conversation going on, and which is a big opportunity, I think, because now economists are realizing that if you want to do the carbon price, in order to make it fair, you need to make sure the money goes back to the people.
Exactly.
And there you can think in terms of training programs, even minimum income schemes could be implemented. And that's where you bring, and that's why it's a big opportunity for Europe, right? To build this social model that you were saying. So having that, yeah, that would be our three priorities.
To not let no one behind is our slogan. Huh? Yeah. Always.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid this is all we have time for today. Just transition, but don't leave anybody behind. That is the mission that we have to achieve. Thank you very much for listening and watching. See you next time.
Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you don't miss future episodes by subscribing to Social Europe Podcast. You can also read our articles on www.socialeurope.eu and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter @Social Europe. Until next time.